Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right. Pop Life Podcast today is August 5th. I know that because that's my mom's birthday. So happy birthday, Mom. And my son Julian's birthday is Monday, the 10th. So it's 5 and 10. So I got a lot of Leo love in my life. My mom actually thought Julian was going to be born on her birthday. She was like, he's going to be born on my birthday. You know, but how's everybody doing? How'd y'all deal with the storm? What's your, bro, you weren't even here. Yeah. Is your neighborhood good with this from the storm yesterday?
Yeah. A lot of leaves, you know, power went down, but you know, we have a generator. We don't play that shit at my crib.
Yeah.
So the generator kicked right in, and there were a couple down trees, but they've been very good at maintaining near the power lines and near the, like the telephone lines and things. So over the course of the year, you'll see the trucks come out, and if the leaves and the branches are going over too much, they'll come out and chop
trim
that
stuff.
Trim it up. Yeah. So it wasn't too bad.
Good. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're in the city, so
yeah, it was
a badass storm. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was raining hard.
Yeah, but it wasn't like terrible. Yeah. But yeah, there was a lot of thunder. The irony is, I was on the phone with my mom. I actually tweeted this. Like, I knew I was getting old because I was on the phone with my mom and uncle. When I heard the thunder, I was almost like, y'all need to let me get off this phone.
I got to get off this phone now.
It's about to start storming.
Storming out here.
All that thunder, that thunder and lightning.
I was like, get off that phone.
And turn that TV off.
Right. And what's funny is, aside from my great-grandma, I didn't even come from, like, that situation now. About the storm and family, so I don't know where that was. Just like something that's embedded in my DNA, just kind of like rose up in me, because I literally was almost like, oh, I got to go. And then I was like, wait, what am I getting off the phone? I never had that feeling before, but I heard that thunder, I was like, let me go with this phone. Which was funny to me, because it's not like I was going to turn the internet off.
I saw my friends in Long Island
say it was bad.
Long Island got hit pretty bad, and certain parts of Jersey got hit pretty bad. I actually got caught in the beginning of the storm the night before. I had went to Yankee Stadium, and I felt one drop. I was like, all right, let me get up out of here. And literally by the time I got up the top of the hill, that shit opened up like a faucet. And it was thundering and lightning. It was like, boom! And I'm riding my bike, and that shit like, all right, God, don't let me get hit by no lightning on St. Nick Avenue. Well, I made it home. God, thank you, Lord, for letting me get home safe.
I needed that rain. So I bought, I haven't mentioned it on air, but I think I've said to y'all before that like the humidity of my apartment is crazy. Mm. The windows in my apartment aren't sealed well. So I have two consistent problems that I battle with. They always slide down at the top. So in addition to like heat getting out and stuff like that in the winter, which isn't as much of a problem because, you know, radiators
be getting hot.
Mm-hmm. But I have problems with like soot coming into my window sills and like keeping those clean. But in the summer, it's really hard to efficiently cool my house. And I've tried everything. Like I've tried putting it up a pot, tried putting foam sealant around it, but it's just like the windows just aren't installed well. So the other thing it means is that in the summer, it's very humid in my apartment. And for me, humidity is like the fucking dope. I hate it. I feel like I can't breathe. Like I'm high. I can't cool off. So even though my ACs have a dehumidifying function, I actually bought a dehumidifier just to see if it made a difference.
It worked?
Because a little bit, because my desk is by my living room windows. So it's the one area that I can't really cool properly because it's right by the window.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought the dehumidifier, but the interesting thing about it is that it tells you not only what the temp is, it tells you what your percentage of humidity is.
Mm-hmm.
And like optimal is supposed to be, I think, between 30 and 50% or something like that. My house runs at like 55 to 60% humidity over the past week. bruh, it's insane. Like, I'm emptying, it has a little water tank. I'm emptying the water tank like 3 times a day. So, I mean, yeah, it's not, I say that to say I needed that rain because the rain helps.
Yeah, watch that shit. I mean, this has been like a real New York summer. Been dumb hot. I mean, mad muggy, like, for days on end. We haven't had a lot of 100-degree days. We've had a gang of, like, high 80s to 90. And with the humidity, it makes it fucking boiling.
It makes it unbearable. And, like, I think I might have said on here before, like, it actually has made it much easier for me to adhere to social distancing. Because I wouldn't be outside right now.
Yeah, it's hot.
No fucking way. This is that, like, I don't come outside in August in New York except for Sunday sermon. Sunday, like, that's sermon, it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's literally it. It's too swampy outside. It's nasty.
Y'all got any shout-outs?
I have a shout-out. Ha-ha.
Oh, shit.
So, shout-out to this comedian. I never heard of her before, like, a week ago. Sam J. She has a Netflix.
Is that the lesbian gal?
Oh, my God. Yeah, she's fucking...
I got to watch that. I saw the clip. Her clips are funny.
Funny. And, I mean, that's... I can't really think of... I think there's been one other time that a clip really made me want to watch something. And so I saw the first clip they posted the other week, and I was like, oh, I want to... this looks funny. And then they posted another one to say that it was out. I watched it twice yesterday. That bitch is fucking funny.
Yeah, I'm going to watch that.
She's a Saturday Night Live writer, and she has some other stand-up out there, but it's interesting. I find that, and I don't know if it's because we don't have a Def Jam or a Comic View. I never really watched Comic View anyway after D.L. Hughley was host. But I don't know if it's because, like, there's so much other stuff to watch, but I feel like up-and-coming comedians aren't on my radar as quickly as they used to be.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because there was... less programming to watch, so maybe I was more likely to tune into a Comedy Central.
Well, there's no programming now because of COVID, so there's no even clips on YouTube of people performing. So that's also it's been a kind of a dark gap for the past few months too.
Yeah, but it's still like it took me. I feel like a long time to come up on a couple of folks. Like even over the past several years, who's the one who finally, not Michael Che, but who is the comic who finally started the Bill Cosby ball
rolling? Oh, well, Hannibal Buress.
Yeah, Hannibal. Like, I was late to Hannibal. I feel like I was, you know, Michael Che was doing stand-up before SNL. You know, like, it's just some people that I feel like I was late to. Mm-hmm. But her, I did see a clip of her earlier stuff, and it wouldn't have resonated with me the same. Like, she's honed, you know, her delivery and stuff over the last couple of years. But it's funny, man. It's really funny. There's one moment... I haven't watched enough white comedians lately to know if they're doing this shit too, but it's like, we talked about this. It's like every black comedian got to throw in something about some PC shit and making a dress. She has one moment about the Me Too movement that I could feel the audience was like, oh, bitch, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
But other than that, it's really funny and it's really well done and her timing is great. So I would highly, I've recommended it to, the two things I've been recommending to everybody this week are that and P-Valley, which I know I'm late on.
Yeah.
Which I am in love with and enamored with. Yeah.
Okay. You got any, bro?
Yeah, I actually got a shout out.
Oh,
today.
Shit. No drink for y'all today.
Yo, peace to my man. Peace to my man who was working at the U-Haul spot, who was talking to all the white people crazy. Crazy.
He was fed up or just
like, you want the truck or not, motherfucker? like yo, his tone was so, it was so, I'm listening to him and, you know, like, dude comes in or whatever and he's like angry because I guess he made a reservation online. And apparently, you know, sometimes when you make those rental reservations online, you know, the truck you might have thought it's not back yet. The other guy's taking longer, whatever the case might be. And when I tell you, he fucking cut that tone out like so fucking fat. He was just like, look, man, like basically, and this was a big dude.
Like, this is what it is.
Like, it is what it is. You want the fucking truck. He didn't say you want the fucking truck or not.
But he said you want the fucking truck.
That was absolutely his fucking tone. Like, he was killing everybody. So I'm like, I hope this dude don't bust my balls when I get up there. Because he definitely ain't going to be talking to me like that.
Yeah.
And we just going, you want to see me outside, bro. Yeah, exactly. You're not going to be talking to me like that. So as soon as I got up there,
You know, he gave me the black man head nod.
Yeah, what's up, bro?
We was good. Yeah.
We good.
Yo, we chopped it up a little bit.
Yeah, he saw the game.
Peace to my man, because he was definitely not having that shit. I was not going to be talking to him crazy at the job.
Yeah.
He's clearly secure in whatever position he has with the way he was talking. Exactly. He knows his shit.
Got his pinches up. He's good.
Yeah.
You know what
I'm saying? Peace to him.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think I've got no real shout outs. I mean,
I got a couple,
even though they're not really personal. I guess I just want real more mentions. Peace to Loon, who was released.
Chauncey Hawkins is home.
Yeah, he came home a few days ago. I was trying to get his sea legs under him. So peace to him.
And I think Bobby Shmurda, not that Bobby and Loon are the same, but I think Bobby might be up for parole.
Yeah, he's up for parole. I think his hearing got moved. But he's supposed to be possibly getting out soon. And actually, I just saw online that what's it called, might be getting out maybe even today or tomorrow as well. Juelz.
Oh, I forgot Juelz was in jail.
That was a quick turn, though, because he's supposed to be five, so I don't know what happened. So, you know, bless all those folks. So they can get their sea legs up under them.
Shout out to all the incarcerated rappers.
Exactly. piece of verses. Tonight we have Rick Ross versus 2 Chainz.
Tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow. Oh, excuse me. Okay, I thought it was Wednesday.
I thought it was today, too, but it's tomorrow.
Okay, so we'll see how that goes.
And they're talking about it's going to be, I feel like maybe they're going to up the ante somehow with production on this. I don't know how, but they're teasing it. Like, it's going to be different. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. So this is going to be interesting.
See how they lay it out.
Yeah.
I think it will be
a fun versus, though. And it's the young, I don't want to say the youngest, but for lack of these two old niggas, but, you know, it's the most contemporary
versus
matchup.
Yeah. Guys that are still putting our records consistent.
Yeah.
I want to say peace to Jaguar Wright, who's
man.
Philadelphia. Whoop. Was part of the whole Black Lily experience, and which was a place in Philadelphia where kind of the neo soul movement was kind of born. That's where all those guys played, like the Roots and James Poyser, and they kind of all played there, and they would do showcases there all the time and like open mics. Jill Scott, and that's what. So anyway, she comes from that energy, and one of the original Roots members, Malik B, passed away last week. Recently.
Yeah, last week. I want to say it was late last week.
Yeah, so, and Jaguar apparently were close friends. And so Jaguar's kind of going on this, gotten a stance where she's like, look, y'all not going to do Malik wrong. You're going to do him right, or I'm going to start telling all y'all niggas business. And she proceeded to start telling niggas business. And it was...
It's kind of spiraled.
Yeah, it's good.
No, because it's still going. She's on. Yeah, she's yeah, doing. Yeah, she's because, doing because Zoom
she's
calls.
Saying, because she's saying until y'all do him right, like Goldberg. Until you do him right, you ain't gonna have no peace. Like, I'm gonna keep this shit going.
And there's a combination of things going. I was actually talking to a friend of mine about this yesterday. And it kind of ties into the conversation we were having last week about the protection of Black women, and especially like. There's a real conversation about it in hip hop right now because the Talib shit, and then before that it was like J. Cole kind of coming at No Name, and you know, especially when it's supposed to be like our conscious rappers, like the niggas that are supposed to actually uphold a certain standard, right?
They're not supposed to be savages,
right? So with Jaguar, I feel like I watched a lot of it, and listen, the energy feels crazy. I'm not calling her crazy. I'm saying her energy. Feels crazy. And I was talking to a friend of mine from Philly, and she was like, nah, that's pain. Like, that's pain that she hasn't been able to let out before because it started about Malik. But, you know, it's like when you're talking to somebody and they be like, and another thing, let me tell you about the time this nigga did da 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 da. So, like, she jumps timelines, you know, and she jumps subjects. Like, she's talking about to Rick, she's talking about Amir being potentially asexual. She don't know nobody who's ever seen his dick. She's talking about the Roots road manager, fucking the Roots tour manager, and she's talking about this.
Erica,
like, she's just throwing talking about Erica, talking about Jill, calling out Tina Ferris, calling out, like, she's like just like everybody. And at one point she says that she's going to talk about this every day until Jimmy Fallon makes it his make till Jimmy Fallon sees it in his best interest to not do business with the Roots. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And she actually also calls Common out for assault back in the day, or attempted assault back in the day.
On her,
saying that, you know, they've fallen asleep, and even though she kind of thought he was cute and Common was moving around and she was moving around, like she wasn't trying to fuck him, and she woke up to him trying to stick his dick in her mouth. Yeah. That probably actually happened. Like, that's the thing. I believe a strong 80% of what she's saying. I don't know if it's a condemnation on these men in 2020, though. In part because, the behavior was okay then, especially not with Common, but when you... For a lot of us, and that's part of what she's talking about, is the culpability of even women in the game. Because, like, when you come into hip hop, especially those of us who came into this in the 90s, whether as an executive or an artist, it's kind of like you signed up with an unspoken agreement that this is just how shit works here. This is what the culture is. Niggas is gonna try to get at you. You gotta dodge it. Or, you know, bitches is going to be around. You got to ignore it. Niggas is going to do what niggas do. They're going to talk to you crazy. They might try to get at you crazy. Can you handle it? You got to suck it up. You got to ride with it. It's the price of admission, right? And now that we're all grown and socially growing, now there's like, this is how the Me Too movement skipped over hip hop altogether. But now it's like, we're trying to bring that back. Like, let's examine this. Let's talk about this. And I don't think that, you know, her calling out the Roots crew for being hoes on the road in the late 90s and early 2000s is going to cost them any endorsement deals. But I do think that what's getting lost in that is part of what she's trying to do is have a larger conversation about the pain that women have had to take on in this game. Because she mentioned a few women who have been around the crew who kind of got run off. Flo Brown, who was an MC. There was another chick from London. I can't remember her name. And her, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot to unpack with what she's saying. And it's hard to get through it. Because like I said, she's jumping around. She's throwing shots at every motherfucking body.
Yeah.
She even calls Talib out, saying that he would hide in the dressing room in Black Lily to watch them get dressed.
It's a lot.
That
calls herself out because she says she admits that she was cheating on her husband with Talib.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
saying? So, and a couple other niggas. Yeah.
I agree with Nah. I think that it's a little difficult to follow. I haven't watched much of it. I was able to watch it in, you know, clips and short bursts.
Mm-hmm.
Just as someone who initially made their living kind of being on the road, the road is an incestuous place.
It really is.
It is, you know, you have very long trips. You have, and I believe they were always on a bus.
Yeah, so she was saying it was a bus,
Bus tours, you spend an enormous amount of time with one another. Again, this was at a time when these guys were younger men. They was trying to figure shit out themselves, and this is no excuse. It is, you know, probably a reason as to why you saw some of the behavior that you saw.
It was a fraternal culture. Like, it's kind of like this is what there was a sense of, this is what the road entails, like this what is what is. You
yes
do.
Yes, this was
is what it
yes.
is
yes yeah it's kind of what it is. It's par for the course, right? Like, this is the price of admission, so to speak. And so I don't think she's lying. Let me just be perfectly
I don't think she has any reason to lie, really.
I don't think she's lying. I also think that there are some of these stories that are being conflated with opinion and sort of lack of context, and with almost criminal act in nature and absolutely abusive acts of behavior are being conflated, right? That's kind of what it seems.
I agree with that.
And I think that. And I'm not saying she needed to be perfect, because we talked about this last week about not having a perfect victim. So I am not dismissing anything she's saying. I do think that there are some jumbled issues that are occurring right here. I hope that at some point they can kind of be pieced together and she can give a little more insight in a way that is not as painful. And maybe this is therapeutic for her.
I think it definitely feels like
it's a process of catharsis, it's like she's purging. It is literally, and I think she even in one of her lives, and this is the one that I jumped on because somebody posted on Twitter her clip about Common. So I went back to find the whole thing. And what was interesting was that it was a response to someone who had responded to, I guess, the first live she did, where she started about Malik and started going into the more personal stuff. And I guess somebody called her out and was like, is this about Malik or is this about you? And she was kind of like, it's about both, right? So what was interesting is that she went live with this woman who she doesn't know.
Yeah, I'm about to say, who was that? Who was that other gal?
She don't fucking know her. And that was the funny
the girl was like, kind of like, oh,
she got trapped. Yeah, but that's what happened. Like, the girl realized, like, watching her face, and she realized she was trapped Jaguar, and Jaguar wasn't even responding to what the fuck she was saying. It was a process of watching her finally just like give into it and just be like, fuck it, girl, she ain't know what, because at first she was trying to be like, no, but what I was saying and what I was doing, Jaguar was not.
The girl was kind of like, well, did you sing backgrounds on that Root song on the third album? Yeah. It went from
and
that
Jaguar to- was like, and then these motherfuckers, because when my son died, and but you know, like all of that shit, and but she actually even, I think, said then was like, this is not a rant, this is a purge, right? Yeah. And it's and I think that is a valid clarification, because if you're watching, and like I said, it's a lot to watch because the energy is a lot. It's a lot.
What I saw, and I could be wrong, but I think kind of what spurned this, it sounded like her, what she said was she had been obviously holding on to things that have happened to her, but what was really eating her up was not stepping up when she saw things happening to other women. And she's like, I knew that was fucked up, like with the R. Kelly situation with this. And she's like, I knew that was fucked up, and I turned a blind eye to things. And it's been killing me ever since that. I didn't go, yo, girl, come over here, or like, get the fuck away from her. She's like, because we're on, like Russ said, we're on the road, and that's just kind of how this shit happens. So, you know, and being in the bunk beds, hand niggas fucking, and all that, it was a lot, and it was a lot conflated, and some stuff was out of context, because, you know, so we don't know the ins and outs. And that, again, like I said, that's not to say that she's lying, it's just that we don't know how some pieces of the story just got left out.
But I think that the core of what she's doing is helpful. There are three main things I think she's trying to do all at the same time. The first thing is restore recognition for Malik B to its proper positioning in the legacy of the Roots Crew and the Philadelphia movement, right? I think that's one. Two is, I think, like, revisit and make atonement, have a reckoning moment for, like, the way that so many people got marginalized in a movement that was supposed to be collective and artistic and all this other stuff. And, you know, she shouts out, I would be so curious to see how this was playing out if Rich Nichols was still alive, but that's a whole different story. But, like, you know, and then the third is to create a space for women in entertainment, or just women in general, to commiserate with each other for shit that's happened. But it's the second part that is kind of clouding the first and the third part, because the second part is the one that's about, like, retribution. And that's the one where she's like, you know, I charge you niggas with arson because you was gaslighting and you was blowing niggas' careers up. And you was doing all this other shit and hip hop granny fucking 65-year-old women and this and that. And that's the part where you kind of like, what is she talking about right now? Yeah. You know, so that's the part that's, I think, that's going to be the part where that is going to, unfortunately, allow people to decide to dismiss the other.
I mean, I think that, and you know, what was not surprising, but a little disheartening, was seeing So she makes all of these allegations, right? Mm. And out of all of these allegations, I'm watching niggas latch on to the fact that she's suggesting that Black Thought had a ghostwriter.
Is asexual. Oh, had a ghostwriter. Oh, okay, yeah, that's the one that motherfuckers are stuck on.
I'm like, nigga.
Yeah.
Of all of the things.
Yeah, like, that's the thing that got you up in arms.
Yo, that to me encompasses where a large part of the demo who follows those guys are. Mm-hmm. And what we have is there are levels of misogyny, there are levels of violence against women, but because these particular, and I don't mean these guys, but I mean that crowd. We call them the backpacks or the insane crowd, right? Because that crowd does not act in a certain way, meaning they're not, you know, their pants ain't hanging off their ass, they're not talking about killing nobody.
It's a lot of my sister, my brother.
The misogyny kind of gets swept under the rug. The abuse kind of gets swept under the rug.
Which is what happened with Talib.
Yes. You're not associating that in the same way.
As with Future or somebody like that.
That's absolutely what's happening right now. And they've been able to slide on that and not be held accountable on that because it's my queen and my beautiful that, and the third.
I saw somebody literally say, anybody who thinks Talib could be harassing Black women is not familiar with his catalog. And I was like, the fuck does his catalog have to do with his behavior?
It's very difficult, and I want to say this to the listeners. It's very difficult for us to wrap our heads around this. I mean, me, Jeff, and Naima, because we know these niggas.
Right.
For real. Like, y'all might know them, you know, from YouTube
social
shit.
Media. Social and all media. Shit, yeah.
No, nigga. We know them. We've been on tour buses with them.
Yeah.
And they niggas.
Yeah. We know them. And I don't mean them as the roots. I mean them all.
Them niggas.
All them. Yeah. All of them niggas. The collective niggas.
Yeah, exactly. So let's move on. I don't want to die nobody out.
None of them are like.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah. So like, everybody ain't shit, but nor is anybody worth your elevation or deification. Like, everybody has shit with them. And I noticed that a lot of people either feel like everybody in the music industry is shit, ain't shit, they demonic, they fucking trafficking people, they doing all that. I'm not saying that, but I'm also saying that, like, be very clear. Like, we had this kind of conversation before. They're no angels, but also, you cannot judge. We can examine and reflect on, but you cannot judge the behavior of motherfuckers when they were 20 in 1997 by grown-ass niggas in 2020 measures. Different age, different experience of the world, different culture, different accepted norms, different influences. Like, the shit was just different. We can examine it. We should call out that it was wrong. But it's more even than just saying this nigga was wrong, that nigga was wrong, that nigga was wrong. It's a conversation about the culture that we came up in. That's the conversation. It was the culture that was wrong.
And like Bruce said, we'll move on after this. Like, you know, somebody granny was fucking James Brown too. So let's not act like this
100%
in 1988. You know, somebody grandma was getting banged out by David Ruffin and them when they came.
Shit ain't new.
So
groupies are as old as entertainment.
Exactly. So I want to do we talk about your man? I'm gonna start bad and then go good. Did we mention your boy Herman Cain last week? Go ahead.
He died. I think he died the day we taped or something.
I think you're right.
I mean, rest in peace.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. You know what I mean? For Herman Cain.
Herman Cain is dead. That's about all I got to say.
Ran for president and what was that, 12 or 14? When he did the 12 or 16? It was 12. It was 12.
16. It was 16.
Was it both?
He ran with Trump ran.
Okay, yeah, he 16. Ran when Trump ran.
Okay, there was 16. Okay, we did the 999.
But didn't we know him from before? But didn't he do some fuck shit? Herman's always been in the. Hasn't he always been a prominent Black GOP person?
Prominent Black GOP person. Kind of. I remember an interview with him when he was running because he went to Morehouse. He's from Atlanta original. He went to Morehouse and they asked him what was his participation in the civil rights movement. Because he was there, I guess, around the same time as maybe shade after King and those guys. But like he was, it was that era. It was the 60s. And he basically was like, I ain't do no fuck with them niggas. I was just going to school. Like I wasn't, that wasn't my bag at all. That's what them niggas was doing. So he had been on that kind of that energy from early in his life. Like, you know, I'm just going to get this money kind of thing. So he went to a rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and possibly, because it's not confirmed, possibly got COVID-19 from being at the rally because he was there with no mask on. He was a cancer survivor, and I think his he was in remission, so his cancer wasn't that long ago. So he was in a very highly very vulnerable. To get, he's 74 years old. He brought his family there, and possibly caught COVID from the rally. And was dead in 2 weeks. 2 weeks gone. I found it hard to have some sympathy for the man, just because like you walked into it, bro. Like you walked into it and you brought your family into it. Like bro always says, trying to chase the white man's ice being colder and trying to make a point. And you know, you knew you were highly susceptible to possibly catching COVID. And if you look at his timeline, he's talking crazy shit even before that. Oh, we don't need to wear no masks.
Yeah, making it talking about masks being political and all this other shit. And I'm just like, well, I have sympathy for his family because it's a very senseless and unnecessary way to lose your you know, someone that you love.
Yeah, the patriarch.
But it was 100% it was damn near suicide. It was 100% preventable. Yeah,
go ahead, bro. What was you gonna say?
Yeah. I definitely don't have sympathy. I don't take glee in it. I'm not like, you know, tap dancing on his fucking grave or no shit like that. Yeah. But he, when we really put this in perspective, he literally died making a political statement, right? Like he literally, this was the hill. He literally
and making
died
the
on.
Wrong political statement.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, you know, and the people who have been his advisors, the people that have been in his corner, are incredibly awful people. As this man was clearly on his deathbed, they were still tweeting propaganda, false information, all under his social media tags, which is just such a, it's just such a evil, vile thing to be doing, right?
Very like, insidious.
It's just like, what are we, like, this is where we've come
and
to.
Even and so, after he died, there was some...
Yeah, a couple more
go tweets. Ahead. I'm sorry, Sean, go ahead.
No. But you're right. That's the point.
There's some Black GOP woman who, even after he died, was like, all the liberals who come down with COVID miraculously get better, but the Republican person dies. This is a war. And it's like, what the fuck are you even...
Like the virus is looking at you like, oh, you got the Make America Great hat on, you good? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like it's you know? Stupid. I mean, the whole thing is stupid. And then, you know what day he died? He died the morning of John Lewis's funeral. So yeah, it was not the day we take.
Where I was going next, actually.
Yeah.
So I want to mention, obviously, John Lewis's service at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. Three presidents spoke, three former presidents spoke, along with a lot of other luminaries. Church was social distanced, so it wasn't flooded because it couldn't be, but there was a lot of people obviously standing outside, too. I think they had TVs and stuff outside as well. Nancy Pelosi spoke. And I thought it was a very well put together homecoming of, you know, for a man who deserved it. People have issues with some of Bill Clinton's speech because he was kind of talk shit about Stokely Carmichael, which I thought was kind of like, why would you do that, bro? Like, this isn't really not the time or place for that at all. You know what I'm saying?
His phrasing was just really bad.
It was off. Yeah, President Obama, George W. Bush actually was really good. His image turned, and I think it's partially because of how heinous the guy that we have in now, but George W. Bush's image turn is just fascinating.
But you know, the thing about George W. was that as much as we thought George W. was stupid, but not hateful. Right, mostly harmless and being sock puppeted by Cheney, right? Mm-hmm. So it was Cheney who we thought was harmful. We just thought Bush was kind of an idiot. Yeah. Even as we didn't agree that Bush cared about black people, for us, we thought it was more of like a lack of capacity. Whereas with Trump, we feel like it's deliberately fucking like he's an evil villain, he's an evil villain. He's a mindless evil villain because he's an idiot too. But he's a mindless evil villain with other mindless evil with more mindful evil villains around him, which makes him even more dangerous. Exactly. Like, I never felt like Bush was a narcissist. I felt like Bush was an underachiever who was in over his head and who didn't necessarily feel passionate about the job. I think this is the biggest difference. I never felt like George Bush didn't understand the reverence of the office. I feel like Trump has absolutely no respect for the office outside of what it means for him himself. Does that make sense? Like, he doesn't care at all about the greater good of the country. And I feel like Bush, and I know, and I got this online when people were like, Bush is guilty of war crimes. Bush is this. Guess what? Every sitting president we've had in modern history is guilty of war crimes. Like, this is part of what, including
Prezo, if you want to talk about.
Including Obama, which I understand. That's why. Which is why a lot of people attack Obama, but I'm also just kind of like, it is sort of a necessary evil of the office. It's not going to change in the course of one administration. He tried. He was trying to shut down Guantanamo Bay. Like, he was trying. It's not that you can't just walk in there and be like, all right, we done. Like, inherit this shit.
But to that point, and I want to just quickly mention the Axios interview because I watched it. To that point, that's what it's kind of interesting, not interesting is the right term, but interesting because I can't think of another word, that when Trump does things, because the media is very complicit with too, with pushing out anything that he does or says, it's like, I'm always like in the corner, like, yo, he can't do that.
Right.
he can't shut down TikTok. Like, he can't.
And they don't actually know. He says he's going to do this, which is not actually within his capacity. Like, you know what I mean?
That's my point. And then it moves on. Like, the TikTok thing was a big story within the last 3 or 4 days. Now it's non-existent because he's a goofball and he's moved on. And
something like Microsoft is buying it, or like, I think there was something engineer where like now Microsoft has to buy it in order for it to work in the States. Yeah. But it's still a very dangerous.
Yeah, because anything he says, they report it as if it's fact. Like, he'll be like, I'm looking into like shutting down the NFL. Nigga, you can't do that. Like, like, why are we reporting on this shit? But anyway, to the Axios interview, I suggest anybody who hasn't watched it to watch. Did y'all get to watch it?
I've been watching the clips. I have to be careful about how much Trump. I don't like to watch Trump interviews because. They're one of two things. Either I have to detach from them so I can laugh at them, or they're infuriating and scary because they are funny when they should not be funny because this is the fucking sitting president of the United States. You know, so sometimes I just have to not even allow myself to process because the shit is really, it's terrifying. It's actually terrifying that this is the person who's in office. But I've seen clips and it's always just so clear that he doesn't understand what the fuck he's talking about.
Now, and what's even more clear now than, not that it wasn't clear before, but now it's even more clear now that the people that are left, that are around him, are treating him like a child.
It's like, they heavily enable him.
Tell him whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, let him, okay, yeah, cool. Because then when he tries to, I saw something that was interesting, and I don't want to dwell on this clown ass nigga, but I just saw something interesting that kind of gives me his get down. So when I was trying to watch this Axios interview, I actually clicked on something by mistake on demand, and it was the first Axios interview of with Trump, which was, I guess, you know, right when he got in office. And they interviewed a bunch of people before the interview to talk about him. And one guy who ran Trump Plaza said something very interesting. He said that they were talking, they were building the Trump Casino, excuse me. And they said they were building the casinos, and Trump walked in and he started talking about like the windows and how like the certain kind of windows you got to put into the thing and da 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 da. And it was kind of like almost like a technical thing. And the builders and everything else were like, oh shit, I didn't know he even knew about that type of shit. Like that's like a really technical kind of thing. I'm impressed. But he said what Trump does is, That was literally the only thing he knew.
Yeah.
So he'll tell you that one thing.
And just lay into it.
And it makes people assume that he knows everything. But if they had asked him another question about doors or something, he'd have been flummoxed. And so that's what he's been doing with this, with the corona thing. He talks about, I banned people from coming to the country. He talks about ventilators. It's like a couple of things that he always mentions, and if he gets outside of that scope, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Because people give him digestible talking points, because I also believe that Trump repeats whatever the last thing is that somebody said to him before he does whatever.
Absolutely. And you can tell that with the Axios interview that they tried to grill him right before, but then this Jonathan Swan is the interviewer's name. He's very, you know, sharp, and he knows his shit, and he wasn't letting Trump get away with the fuckery. So when he would dig deeper, that's what you're seeing on the clips of Trump being like, no, look at the graph, because it's like
when Trump is literally like, you can't say that, and it's like, because when he's like, no, your quantification is faulty, and Trump's like, no, you can't do that, you can't, and it's like,
yeah,
they go, what? Of course,
yeah, because he's basically saying you can't do that because you're making me look bad. You know, so
right.
Anyway, just watch the Axios interview if you want to get frustrated. I couldn't make it. I got like 20 minutes in, and I was like, I hate this movie. I want to talk a little TV. Did either one of y'all get to watch Real Housewives of Potomac?
I did.
No, I forgot it came back until I saw it in the DVR. But I'm just not.
You know,
is it worth watching? I like Potomac. I watch Potomac. I don't dislike Potomac. But what happened was, I don't know if it's the shutdown. I don't know. Well, it is. I told you guys this a couple months ago. Like, I tapped out even with Atlanta, like in the episode
before. Well, Atlanta wasn't fun to watch.
So I was like, do I feel like going to jump in? And I skipped over Love and Hip Hop Atlanta altogether. So it was kind of like, do I feel like jumping into it? I will eventually. It just wasn't, it hasn't been what I'm in the mood for. Let me put it that way.
No, I totally understand how that's the case. Like I'm going to tell you that was a part of why, like it was challenging to even open up the DVR and go into it. Because I've really been on like comedies,
some other shit.
Specifically
either that or like light, real drama.
Either real life crime shows or some shit like that, or like comedy.
Okay.
This particular, and it's not just reality, because even with like hour long dramas and shit, like I'm just not.
Not no more. I got you. So they opened up. They started the first episode this week. And actually, I thought it was a very good premiere. They caught us up to speed quickly and kind of jumped into what's going on in this part of their lives now. A couple of things caught my interest right away. One of the main storylines, I guess, we're going to see throughout the season is Giselle getting back with Jamal Bryant. And you know how that turns out, you know, and it was kind of, you know, not surprising, but it's kind of like it was interesting that the women were pretty open about like the fuck, like what are you doing, like why are you getting back with this dude? But what's more interesting was Giselle's children, well, their children, were really like, what are you doing? Like, we don't want this shit at all. Like, we don't like what he did through. Like, we don't like, it's weird now because it feels like y'all are putting on a show. Like, they kept it gully with their mom. Like, and I don't think they weren't being like disrespectful with it, but they were being like very honest. Like what, we don't really like how this shit feels. What'd you think, bro?
Well, we have to remember that she has been divorced from him
12 years.
Yeah, 12 years. Those girls are 14 and 13. They have no
concept of them as a family unit in this traditional sense. They have, you know, obviously their co-parents or whatever. And if I had to guess based on watching the show, he doesn't seem to have a very intimate relationship with the girls. They don't seem to have their own relationship. Like their relationship seems to be processed through their mom.
Through their mom. And maybe a few phone calls.
But maybe a few phone calls.
I don't think it's the whole, like, oh, we went to Atlanta and spent like 3-4 months.
Yeah, they don't. They let me say a better word is probably disconnected.
Yeah.
They seem very disconnected. And, you know, that happens. You know, it's, again, this is, you know, he's not in the home on a regular basis.
Yeah, he's not in the home. He's in a totally different state.
Totally different state, right? So, you know, that comes with its own set of challenges. But, yeah, I thought it was, you know, listen, Giselle can make the decisions that, you know, obviously she wants to make. Like she told her kids, we're the adults here. We get to make these decisions, and that's that. But you know,
I wasn't really comfortable with that. I mean, it's the truth, but it felt like just shut the fuck up. Like this is what it is. Like, I was kind of like, I mean, again, not that the kids should be making her decisions about her love life for her, but it felt very dismissive. Like,
I'm not tripping. No, you're not. I think what she's trying to do is, what it felt like to me was someone who recognizes that those girls were being honest and telling the truth, and that she's kind of got to, like, this is the part of going back to him that she has to kind of deal with, right?
Yeah.
She has to fix that part. Yeah. And I think it sounded like a bit of a frustrated mom, not that she was being dismissive of y'all will get over it, but like, I don't want to talk about this now. Almost like cutting that conversation off.
Cutting it short.
Cutting it short. And particularly because the cameras were rolling.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I'm saying,
I got you.
Like, we definitely not going to have this discussion
on TV.
Because if you watch the show, there's always the dichotomy of her being this sort of elite.
Yes.
Jack and Jill-ish.
Yes.
Pedigree
AKA,
person.
Yeah.
And then juxtaposed to her mean girl tactics, the all of the things that come with her behavior, which I'm not in judgment of. I'm just simply stating as fact, right? Like, that's what we've seen.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, man, I think she's making this decision to go to get back with Jamal. And if I had to guess, again, this is allegedly because I don't know her, I think that she's had several failed relationships on the show. And on the show.
So
I think that this has been a comfort zone.
Yeah.
Right? Like I get to kind of listen, she's an attractive woman, but she's also now a famous woman.
Yeah.
So her walking into a room is not always the same. Listen, she's usually the center of attention in a room, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I'm sure with her being famous now has made that hurdle harder for her to get into the dating pool. Right? Like she has a very small dating pool.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So this to revert back to him is some level of comfort and gets her kind of, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's now getting the things that she wants to have.
Yeah. The other thing I found kind of interesting was they went back into the whole thing about Juan and Robin not being married. And he said he was ready, kind of, I guess, maybe. But I don't know anything about them, from the show, but I'm just like, bro, like, you've been with this woman, like, for 25 years. You got two kids. They'll live together. Like, what is the holdout at this point? Like, y'all sniffing 50. Like, what is the, what's
I think he might be, going through.
I mean, they're engaged now. They're engaged now. So the proposal is coming in the season.
Okay.
They're engaged again.
I can listen, man. You know, Juan is... They got divorced. I think Juan might have been very reluctant in that he probably didn't want to go back to a place where he wasn't happy.
Yeah.
And I think that there was a part of that marriage where he wasn't happy. Like he says that in this episode, like everything wasn't all good.
In the clips leading up.
Yeah. And so I think that they had hit a stride, right? Because these kids were no longer small kids.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't babies. She had her own separate life. She was kind of moving and shaking and doing her thing. And so I think that he was reluctant to almost overturn the apple cart, so to speak, right? Yeah. Like he didn't want to mess up what they had. Like, listen, we smashing, you know, I come home to home cooked meal, I take the boys out, I could do, you know, like
look like the money is kind of getting back together, like financially.
We have a great relationship. We're friend because also there are no expectations here.
And with
a marriage comes expectations.
It's a pressure. So I mean, you know, the clips for the upcoming season look good. There's a lot going on. Look like bro, your boy Ray.
They're trying to put my man Ray out the pasture, man. Not on my watch, goddammit. Not on my watch. If I gotta drive down to Potomac and go get my nigga Ray,
get in the car.
They ain't gonna do my nigga Ray like this, man.
Get in the car, Ray. Get in the car. We going. So it's some action coming up, including a huge fight with Candace and Monique. I read that Monique whooped her ass. But it's a lot coming up in the season. So Nye, you should definitely like check in. It looks like somebody.
When the preview first dropped, I was with it. I was excited, and then it took some months for it to come around. Honestly, the only reality TV I'm watching right now is all the stuff around 90 Day Fiancé just because it's so stupid. It's just so silly.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I started watching.
You got into it?
The family Chantel.
Oh, my God. They are ridiculous. Nigga. Oh, my God. They're unbelievable. Honestly, they are so unbelievable that I keep telling myself, their shit has to be contrived and scripted. Because I'm like, no way are both families this fucking horrible.
Yo, listen, I'm going to just say this. I'm like 30 minutes into episode one. And the first thing I said was, who is this deacon ass nigga that's her daddy? And of course, by episode three, they go into the church. He got the three-piece suit.
He's legit a deacon. They're awful fucking people. This has nothing to do with anything, but I'm gonna forget if I don't bring it up. I did want to shout out before we get too much further into it. This week was the 25th anniversary of the infamous Source Awards. The South got something.
Oh yeah.
If you don't want your executive producer all in the video dancing, you know, New York ain't got no love for Snoop Dogg, not Dre. And I was tapped to be part of a project with NPR Music. We are calling it a Southern Rap Canon, but we also don't want to call it a Southern Rap Canon because canon suggests it's definitive, and we acknowledge that it's not definitive, and that's the whole point, is that just as we all talk about Black people aren't a monolith, Black culture is not a monolith, Black music is not a monolith, but we went through, I want to say all told, I think we did 50 albums and 50 singles going from the late 80s coming all the way up to Meg and City Girls that we feel like are essential elements of Southern rap. Because, you know, when rap canons are done, it's almost like the South really gets overlooked except for until you get to Outkast, right? And maybe Face. And a little bit of 3-6 Mafia sprinkled in there somewhere. But my contributions included, because as listeners know, even though I'm largely a New Yorker, I was more or less raised my entire formative years in the South. So I did DJ Jimmy, Where They At. I did Young Breed, How They Do That There. I did Throw Some D's, and I did 400 Degrees and Word of Mouth.
The songs like The Wobble make it on that list?
Wobble isn't in it, but Swag Surf is in it. You know what I mean? So it was an interesting, and actually it would have been interesting to have you in the combo, like a person, you would have been interested in the combo, let me put it this way. Because it's music writers, music critics, and music scholars. So, like, one of the women who was part of it, she actually has written, like, an anthology of work on Outkast, and she teaches, like, she's a whole PhD, but she teaches, she has an Outkast book coming, actually, now. So the pool of people they pull from, but we all have some kind of Southern roots. That was the through line. And it was interesting, even in the combo, to talk about, like, how we were going to decide what merited inclusion, right? So, like, the first thing we had to talk about was regions. Like, were we including Virginia? Were we including, like, that? Like, were we including the North Atlantic? Then we had to talk about, like, is Cole a Southern artist since his sound was formed in New York? Is, you know what I mean? Like, is it about where you're from or where you rep? So even that was, like, a whole thing. That's also why we didn't want to call it definitive, because people could argue for more or less. Because, like, we included Missy, we included Cole, we included the Clips, and some people would say that's not Southern.
What about Ross? What about Ross and Luke?
We included Ross in there. Luke, absolutely. Luke is in there, not just for sound, but because of Two Live Crew being largely, you know, fighting the battle for hip hop, for explicit hip hop, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, even with me, I was one of the only people jumping up and down screaming DJ Jimmy, not even realizing that it's the first, like, bounce record. I just knew that Trigger Man sample is important, and that Jimmy's version of the Trigger Man sample has been getting a lot of play lately. So I was like, we can't not. And then even once I dove into it, I was like, oh wait, this is actually an important song. Who knew that? Yeah. So, like, yeah. So I think, so it's on NPR Music. If you guys Google NPR Music in the South Got Something to Say, I think you'll find it. It's a project I was proud to be part of. And even for me, it was like a learning experience, because I realized that even I myself, outside of nostalgia, aside of moments of nostalgia, I tend to largely not talk about Southern hip hop in a real way. Yeah. And I had been back in New York for so long by the second wave or the real mainstream wave in the late 2000s that I just kind of wasn't even really paying attention to it. So, or the significance of it, rather. So, yeah, I think it's worth the look when you guys get a chance. And, of course, there's a lot of UKG in there. UGK in there. Conversations about Pimp, conversations about Bun. And I think it's important for people to really understand, like, all the different things that emerge, like Louisiana versus Memphis versus Houston. Because even when we talk about the South, we talk a lot about Atlanta, and there's so much more to it than Atlanta.
I want to mention Black King, Beyonce's
Blackest King.
Beyonce's, I guess it was a movie, I guess.
Visual accompaniment, movie. Visual album, but it's the Lion King soundtrack.
It's Lion King soundtrack, right. mixed with new songs too, though. The Brown Skin Girl, and there's a few others. There's a lot of others, actually. So the Lion King portion of the music is really just kind of clips of audio from the Lion King. But the music throughout the film is all new stuff.
It's not from that Lion King accompaniment that she released. Remember, she released her own.
Oh, you know what? I actually never heard that. So it could
She released her own thing when the Lion King came out.
Okay.
Her own
little, yeah. So it could be. So I'm not. Then let me take that back, because I'm not sure, because I never listened to that. But it's visually stunning. Obviously, all based in with African culture. African dancing, African music, African kind of traditions in the visuals as well. She incorporates a lot of African artists. Wizkid and several others are in the records on the records with her, which is why I think it's not the same as that thing she released. Tierra Wax in it, performing. Jay-Z has a verse on a record. Kelly Rowland's in on the visual side. It's beautiful to look at. There's no real kind of like dialogue, so it's not like they're acting. But it's very stunning to look at it. You can tell it took a lot of work, a lot of energy to put this thing together. And then it was a little bit of a controversy because No Name, who you mentioned a little while ago, and I'm paraphrasing, but she basically was saying that she felt like Beyonce was colonizing African culture for her own capitalist gains. And what was very interesting was, like, there were a lot of people from the African
from the continent
of Africa, different countries in the continent of Africa, that basically was like, yo, you're bugging, and she's using this her platform to expose our cultures to the world, and she's been nothing but respectful of our cultures. And, you know, there's whoever's worked on her stuff with her is, you know, she's hired a ton of people from the continent, so there's money going back to those communities, whether it's dancers or people on the, you know, behind the scenes on the set, production, whatever. So she's paying, they've paid a lot of money out to make this happen. And apparently, you know, her and her team are very conscious and ask a lot of questions, you know, right. Like about, like, are we wearing this right? And like, what does this mean? And we move hand movements, like, what is this? Like, they're not just like, yo, we just going to get down. Y'all just get in the background and bug out.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to see, like, you know, No Name kind of jump up on this one thing and kind of get, you know, pushed back down by African people who were like,
a lot of people were actually echoing or saying in their own way, because No Name ended up deleting that tweet. I think because what happened was her criticism of Beyonce was getting lost in the criticism of capitalism through art.
It's like you
kind of had to separate. Like, No Name gives me, I appreciate Young Sis for like trying to have conversations, but she gives me very like, I just took this class last semester energy. Like, she's bad.
This is the thing. And I had a conversation. I'm forgetting the woman's name on Twitter. We kind of talked about it a little bit.
What's her name? Shamara? What's her name? Sham?
Oh no, it wasn't Sham guy. I know Sham's name. It wasn't Sham.
Because Sham was one of the people who, to me, was kind of, I don't want to say defending No Name, because I wasn't taking her down, but who had No Name's back a little bit, that she's growing and learning. Yeah.
And listen, I'm not here to dog No Name, but I kind of like, it makes me see kind of what Cole was saying. I never interpreted as Cole trying to dog No Name. I interpreted as him saying, okay, I think that you think I know things because of my kind of persona and my place in hip hop. But there's a lot of things I don't know, and right. Don't kill me because I don't know them, and make me feel weird to ask you a question because you're gonna chop my head off because you're looking at me like, why don't you know that? That's kind of what right. I was saying. And No Name kind of has that energy. She's like, yeah, but and there's a valid point about capitalism. You know, and people, you know, exploiting culture for capitalism. It's a valid point, but sometimes I just I don't want people to think, oh, because it's a woman, I'm coming. It could be a dude. I just feel right. like sometimes she kind of comes at it like, pointing down at you, like.
I can agree with that. But where Cole got fucked up was that Cole didn't address it as how No Name talks to anybody. He addressed it as how No Name talks to men in hip hop.
Oh, men.
Because she never called Cole out specifically.
He
took it, it's a different version of the Tillip shit. He took it personally, but then, and he even said in there, he was like,
maybe feel guilty.
But he also said it was her responsibility to educate. That's the other part, was like, you should be teaching these people. But also, like, Cole, you graduated magnum cum laude. What the fuck are you talking about? Like, you ain't the person to deliver that message to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you literally graduated with honors, my nigga. Like, are you kidding? I mean, I'm sorry, but go ahead, Sean. But I do think that her energy is very, I just learned this and that makes me an expert and you need to get right or get left. And she's learning. And I've also said before, like, we talked about even with Nick, like, there is a problem with socializing all this shit as you're still processing it and learning it. Because the internet doesn't forget, right? So you jump out the window, and then you have to retract. But what I was going to say was that... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just think that we're ignoring the fact that she enjoys the adulation. She enjoys the cosign. She enjoys the engagement. Yes. She enjoys the retweets. She enjoys the yes girl. I'm not saying she's wrong. That it's bad to feel that way. Many people do. I'm saying that that is part of the driving force that that person is not necessarily processing this in a more subdued way, that they're right. processing this out in out in the open because they feel like, again, it brings them closer to people. It gets the engagement.
Yeah, they want the co-sign for it.
They want the co-sign for it.
It's become part of her brand.
Yeah. And in fairness to J. Cole, she was talking about him. Like, right. like let's not pretend...
I didn't even know what the fuck she said, so I was just like, I didn't know about it until Cole answered.
And even back with the young woman with the Talib shit, like, we know what Talib did was bullshit. We know what he did, you know what I'm saying? But, like, let's not keep pretending that that wasn't a thing. Like, we want to call a thing a thing, but then when
Like, you know, I disagree with you with the woman with the Talib shit, because she did not call Talib out. She said most of these rappers are married to light-skinned women, but we'll talk about that another time.
What she did did not warrant what took place.
Right.
But she did put his name out there. Now, he searched his name. She didn't add him. She didn't
say his name. She responded to a tweet that said his name.
She didn't even type Talib's name. That's my thing. My point in all of this is people operate with a level of a desire to have engagement. Mm-hmm. And that is driving a lot of these tweets. This is now like the Twitter... This has now become about branding. It's now become about how you can use this and leverage this as other opportunities. And this is a part of that. And I'm not saying that she's disingenuous at all. I've actually muted the young woman because it's just a lot.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, and she does a lot of
It's a little too much for me. And God bless her, right? Like, I don't find anything that she's saying to be, oh my God, the worst thing ever. But yes, right. It's a lot. It's a lot.
And with Cole, I'm talking maybe out of.
Well, I was going to try to bring it back to Beyonce, but go ahead.
I just want to say one more thing about the No Name thing, because I'm right about this, but if I'm wrong, I apologize up front. From what I took from the Cole thing, he was saying, I guess she's been kind of raised in a home that has always had, you know, these discussions about black history and black life and militant stances and stuff like that. So it wasn't really that she just got up on shit. It's that she's been raised in a home like that. So Cole was saying basically like, well, you've been raised like this, so you know this stuff. I wasn't raised like that. So like, don't come at me. Because this has been your life. Like, you've been.
It's not her responsibility to give him that, though. He has to take some ownership. He's got to read some more books.
And
not even necessarily, go read a book. Like,
go read a book, nigga.
You know,
go read Solo Online.
I'm just saying, this is also about discussions. This is also about your circle. This is also about heightening your consciousness through other means. It doesn't necessarily mean you'll go get a book. It means that, maybe you are being a little isolated. Maybe this is the time for you to understand it. Open up your spectrum and kind of see how things can operate in a world that isn't just with this linear idea.
Right. And I think, and then I'll move on. The last thing I'll say is that I think that what I saw or what I understood that she did, even if the execution was wrong.
You talking about Beyonce?
No, I'm talking about No Name. Okay. And I'm going to come back. But my understanding of what she did, even if the execution was wrong, was more call out the hip-hop artists that have positioned themselves, I don't want to say as an authority, but as thought leaders. You know what I mean? And to say, why are you not more engaged in a civic conversation, in a social justice conversation?
And I think that's valid.
So like, then that's my thing. Like, we don't, and it's a delicate line. Like, we don't necessarily need to look to hip hop artists to be thought leaders, but if you're going to position yourself in that space, you kind of assign a responsibility to yourself. Now, with the Beyonce thing, No Name, so there were people from the diaspora who actually agree with No Name. If they didn't agree with her directly, they were giving Beyonce similar criticisms. But after viewing Black is King, I've noticed that a few of them have had to be like, you know what? Mm-hmm. I take back what I said. This shit is absolutely thorough. It's absolutely dope. Now, I haven't watched it yet because in this era of like in-depth fucking analysis, and in fairness, Beyonce does create her shit to be multi-layered and analyzed. Mm-hmm. I gotta wait for that shit to die down before I consume it on my own. It's too much on it. It just requires too much for
me. My thing is I watched it obviously because it was, you know, something new and it's something I wanted to discuss on the show, but I didn't engage in much of the talk about it. I just watched it. You know what I'm saying? I didn't watch it and then, you know, kind of dig into the social media shit, because like you said, then that becomes a lot and it kind of just gets cloudy and messy. And so I just watched it. And I think I tweeted once, like, wow, this thing is amazing. And that was it. Like, I just kind of watched it for my own general entertainment. Because like you said, when Beyonce, who's actually such a huge artist, does something like this, which is, you know, multi-layered, it's long. It's like 90 minutes long. There's a lot there to digest. You know, her children in the thing, you know, there's a part where Blue Ivy's kind of like dancing and singing. It's a lot, you know. Miss Tina's in it, like, you know. It's a lot happening in the film. So I stay away from the conversations because, like you said, it gets to be too much. Maybe I'll revisit them at a later date, but right now I just wanted to watch it. You know what I'm saying? I want to wrap up with Last Chance You. Last Chance You was a documentary series on Netflix. It's about college. They're moving into basketball next season, but the first four seasons were about junior college football. And there were two seasons at a junior college in Mississippi.
East Mississippi.
Yeah, East Mississippi. Then it was two seasons. What was the Jason Brown school at again? Kansas.
Indy. Right?
Yeah, in Kansas, in Independence, Kansas.
Independence, yes.
Independence, Kansas. It was two seasons in Independence, Kansas. And then the last season of the football was in Oakland, California. So it's about these junior college football programs who are pretty successful, and they turn some players, you know, get them go to D1 schools. And there have been a couple of people that have gone to the NFL like that we've watched on this series. And this one was really interesting. It's based in Oakland, California, so it's not like the South or anything like that. You don't think of Oakland, California as a football kind of powerhouse, football, you know, area. And they made this one, in my opinion, more about Oakland. There was obviously it's about football, but they made it about the community of Oakland and what's happened, like gentrification and you know, guys trying to kind of get out of Oakland. And of course, there's layers in that. There's a kid who I'm sure we're going to discuss deeply named Dior, who has, you know, terrible relationship with his dad. There's another kid named Ray Ray, who's
RJ,
yeah, who's looking to kind of go to the NFL. He's a cornerback, a lot of talent. So, but I felt like they made him as much about, again, because in East Mississippi and in Independence, Kansas, there's no really kind of, there's not much of a town to talk about. But it's Oakland, California. It's a city. It's a very famous city for a lot of people are coming out of there. So they kind of made it as much about the city as the football program in and of itself. And the coach who's been coaching there since 1979 in Oakland, the Oakland area. But what'd you think about it, bro?
I thought it was really good. Mm-hmm. So a couple things. One, I think that Oakland, like only few cities in the States, has enough character to become a character.
Absolutely.
And
Oakland is absolutely one of those.
Yes. And I thought that they were they did a great job in that. I also think that as a producer, a lot of times you kind of go in with the idea of one thing and you kind of it might morph as mm-hmm. as you're going along. Mm-hmm. And so I think that Oakland became more of a character because the season did not, in my opinion, present a star. There was no football star, and the coach was not as gregarious as the other guys, which I actually enjoyed.
The first two coaches ended up being, both of them, very polarizing
Yes.
Very polarizing people, like, you know, it was like some racism shit. It was but this coach, there was zero of that. Like, he seemed like he was a good dude, you know? I mean, well, he has his ways, but underneath it all, he was a good dude.
Well, I also think that this was probably more in line with what the normal JUCO experience was.
Yeah, okay.
You know, they didn't have – the first two seasons, you would see guys that kind of were – that had gotten bumped down, so to speak, from other big D1 schools. We're talking like they – you know, the first East Mississippi guys, like they had guys from Power 5 conferences.
Yeah, like I said, a couple of those guys that went to the NFL.
You know, so – and then the same with the independents, right? Like you had guys that were coming from really big schools, really highly touted, things of that nature. And this was really like a scrappy sort of thrown together team that, again, looked and felt much like a regular JUCO program, what you would assume a junior college program to be. And you could see the talent level immediately, how different it was.
Absolutely. Even just the size of the kids.
Sure.
The kids during this season were small compared to the other guys. Were like
if, you had, if, your quarter, if the quarterback was 6'1",
barely.
They was barely. You know.
Yeah.
You know, East Mississippi was throwing out guys 6'4", 6'5". You know these. You know,
with so cannon arms.
Different. Yeah. Totally different in that sense. Also, you don't get a Miss Brittany. You don't get a Miss Pinker.
No. Yeah.
You don't get that. What I think is a very important part is that woman around. That sort of nurturing feeling. There was I believe she's a secretary, part of it, but she's
the black woman.
But she's not really in the show like that.
Yeah, she's in it, but not really. Like, you know, like with Miss Brittany, speaking, we got like their life background. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like you followed them home and stuff. We didn't get that with this one. I thought one of the most interesting characters, before we get to Dior, was the white kid, RJ, because it was the first time that we kind of got the kind of like the white receiver with all the black guys. And so, and the coach kind of taking it for granted that, yo, you'll be all right because you're white, you're good. You know what I'm saying? I don't think he wasn't doing that overtly, but later on at the end, he was like, he never made no calls for me. Like he didn't, because he felt like you're going to be good either way because his family came from, his family had money, but it was a really weird kind of
I thought he didn't make calls for him because I didn't think he thought he was that good, to be quite honest, the way I read it. I thought he was a solid kid, and if coaches were calling for him or looking to make those calls for him, then he would have answered and probably co-signed, but I definitely never got the sense that he thought, hey, this is a stud. This kid is going to go to the next level. He's going to do well. The way he chastised him was like really consistent and really hard.
Kept saying the same things.
And you know, look, I'm not as versed in football enough to know if a receiver is running a proper route or if he's giving off a tell to the cornerback. Like I just would never, you know, I don't know that stuff, but a coach does, right? Like they have to look at the film. So I think that that's what we saw. It was very weird when they brought up the whole grandfather thing.
That was like, weird.
I was like, I don't necessarily know that he needed to have that, like, blasted. It's like, it's his grandfather, right? Like, his grandfather did a heinous thing. It would be like, hey, your granddad is like Charles Manson or some shit. Like, is that necessary? Yeah, I mean, it's not really tied.
It don't really got nothing to do with him. But I think what they were kind of trying to show is, the grandfather and shit. Like he kept saying, basically, he's like, he didn't say this at all, and I don't know. But it was kind of implied that like he grew up fucked up too. Like he's like, yo, my shit fucked up. Like I grew up broke. My mom was like had mental issues. Like me and my brother. Like my shit was basically like a black story, the typical black athletic story. Except he had a family to fall back on to could save him, had money. But previously coming out there, he's like, my shit was raggedy too. But like people don't look at me. I'm blonde hair and I'm a good looking kid. They don't think that I could have that story. That's kind of what.
But that is true. But I also think that
the fact that he had a family to fall back on.
Yeah, that's the
difference. It's sort of indicative of those safety nets, right? Like it shows you the difference that Black kids are going to have when Black kids have those challenges versus white kids having those challenges, right?
Like you already had that fallback.
This kid had a family friend who bought him a car.
Word.
God bless that man. Like, that's a huge thing for a college student. He knows, okay, he's going to be going to a four-year school. He's going to be, you know, he's got to figure out how to get there. He's got to be able to move around. Like, that's a massive purchase. Of course, he's got to pay the insurance and do all the registration. Like, I'm just saying, the man who bought the car, because you can't just buy a car.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Like,
yeah.
Like, he's got to eat all of that.
He's got to eat all that,
You know what I'm saying? As someone who has purchased a car as a gift, right? It's not just you buy the car and that's it.
Yeah,
right?
You got to buy get all the shit too. Yeah. What'd you think about the Dior story?
I thought Dior was a heartbreaking story because of two things. One, I think Dior is, as a football player, I think he's very average, in my opinion.
He's
I don't think he's small.
He's like 5'8".
I don't think he's high level D1 material just from what I saw. And again, I'm an inexperienced, you know, I don't have experience as a coach, but from what I saw, you know, this kid isn't a stud. You know what I'm saying? He's not a game breaker. So that's how I looked at him as a football player. But as a young man, I saw a kid that was and is kind of tortured a bit, right? Like he's dealing with some trauma and he's got some hurdles and he's dealing with things that are frankly unimaginable. And I would dare say he didn't even express all of the shit that really took place in his childhood.
He didn't at all. He skipped over most of it.
Yes. I think he touched on highlight points that he was comfortable with discussing on camera.
Yeah.
But I don't think he really got into the depths of it. And to, you know, see him, you know, I guess we have to sort of, it's very difficult to talk about Dior personally and not talk about his dad.
Yeah.
And his relationship with his dad and his parents, I should say. So Dior's dad is, I'm going to just, you know, be frank about this. He's an absolute piece of shit. He's a horrible human being. As a man, as a father, the nigga whole style is chump.
Mm-hmm.
So basically Dior talks about when his mom and his dad are together, you know, early on in life. And Dior starts to discuss, you know, how his dad made him wear girls' clothes to school.
Yeah.
He would like shave his head and like fuck his haircut up.
Yeah, on some George Jefferson shit.
Yeah, like to like punish him.
His dad said that to teach Dior to be not scared to get hit, he would throw him into like fucking trees.
A light pole. Yeah, he would throw him into light poles and trees and shit like that.
What the fuck is he doing?
It was and I'm listening to this guy and he basically says that at 17 he sent his 17-year-old son back to live with his mom because there could only be, and I quote, one lion in the den.
Yeah.
My nigga, he's a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And probably what he was dealing with was at 17, many young men start to grow into their own.
Mm-hmm.
But a big part of them growing into their own is that they see certain behaviors that you've laid down. And they've seen you be a bully. And they've seen you be boorish. And they've seen you act an ass.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were probably looking at a mirror in terms of this young man.
Yeah. And then Dior Dior kind of started to call him out on it. Like, bro, like, what the fuck? Like I'm not going to let you just beat the shit out of me all the time anymore.
And that's where I feel like they tap danced. I think they tap danced over the abuse. If I had to guess, I would say that there was probably some spousal abuse occurring in that house.
Yep.
It's usually, and maybe it wasn't physical. It was probably emotional. It was probably psychological. Maybe there was additional physical abuse. It wouldn't surprise me based on this. Looking at his dad, I felt bad for this kid on so many levels because he calls, first of all, the women in his dad's life, his aunt and his grandmother, are really shitty people too.
Yeah.
And I say that because they have tried to manipulate him, guilt him.
Mm-hmm.
Not tried. They actually manipulated him. His grandmother literally manipulates him.
Yeah. Set him
to
up.
To come face to face with his father when he's clearly, and he's, you're watching.
He told them, like, I don't want to see him.
Fam, you're watching this kid literally basically have an anxiety attack. Like, he's basically having a panic attack. Mm-hmm. Because he has to come face to face. His son, his child, his kid would rather sleep in a fucking car.
Yeah.
Than in a home. Like, do you know how fucking awful you have to be? Like, as a, like, this man put his son at 17 on a bus back to Arkansas.
From Oakland.
On a bus.
From Oakland.
I was blown away by the cognitive dissonance that his dad had.
And then his pops is acting like, what's the problem?
Yes, right. And so what you're seeing is you're seeing him want to have a relationship purely based on his terms, right? He only wants to have this relationship based on his terms. And his terms are this. I'm not apologizing for shit. I'm not acknowledging shit. Everything I did, whatever. You'll get over it. And in one hand, he wants to tell him, hey, you know, you can go to school in state for free. And he's not even acknowledging or recognizing why Dior doesn't want to take that.
Nothing from him.
He doesn't want anything from him. Like, my nigga, you shipped him off.
Yeah.
You wrote a 17-year-old off.
And now you're like pulling up on his game. Even the first game he pulled up, his uncle was like, oh, your dad was here. He was like, he was supposed to be happy about that shit. He's like,
yo. Another situation where a dude is being manipulated. Then I guess his mom comes to his last home game, and I'm listening to dude's new wife.
It was crazy to me. This is gonna sound kind of fucked up, but like, if somehow some way Dior was able to make the NFL, which, like I said, I don't think he has the skills to do that. It would actually be the worst thing in the world, because the manipulation would go up 15-fold, because there would be money involved now, and it would be more people trying to get, you know, there's more of his dad's fuckery, more of his people's fuckery, because they'd be just trying to take what they could get from him at this point, you know?
That kid has absolutely, and they don't really go into depths about the relationship with his mom.
Yeah.
But it is what I can gather, it is a relationship that he has decided that he has to take care of himself. Mm. So my assumption is that his younger siblings are, his mom is having, I don't want to say a difficult time, but clearly she has her hands full.
Yeah, him going there is not going to help the situation.
Yeah, and she's living wherever across country. She doesn't really have the means to just assist him in certain things. So watching this kid, he's working, he's going to school, he's trying to do everything right, and he's like, busting his ass, and he's got like $5.
Wingstop and shit. He got $5 in his account. Like,
and so, I was torn, because I'm like, it was the first time, like, so normally Last Chance You is high strung, right? Like, you get these sort of waves of emotion, but it is never as dark as it felt this season.
Absolutely.
And this season felt really dark. And so it kind of bordered on exploitation. And I say that because, like, this kid is sleeping in his truck with film crew. With a film crew from a multi-billion dollar company.
Exactly.
But I also...
Well, going back to the hotel, the good room.
Yes, right? So I'm sure, listen, I don't know those people who were on production. Yeah. Right?
They probably were torn.
I would not... See, the problem with that is that production, even when they feel bad, you cannot interject yourself in the story. Right? Like, this, you have to capture the story. You can't like giving him money for him to go get a hotel room impacts the story.
Of course, it changes everything.
Right? It changes everything, right? So I was kind of torn with that, but listen, the season was really good. You can see they shortened it from, like, usually it's like 10 episodes. They shortened it to 8 this season because of COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just, it was a lot of different things that was eye-opening, particularly, like, seeing a, you know, these guys didn't have housing, which is what which was also why it was weird to sort of see them scrambling for homes. And really, it was only two guys, right? Like, I'm sure that there were other guys who had those issues, but this season really kind of focused on three players.
Yeah. And but I think that's also why the Oakland, that was one of the ways they brought the Oakland character in, because justification is Oakland's probably been one of the worst stories of justification in the country. Like, it's awful. Like, they've just basically, like, people, you know, with means have just literally taking most of the city over, because living in San Francisco was just, it's unbelievable.
It's too hot. Yeah.
It's way too hot to live there. So they pushed people further and further out. So you say you got kids like Dior, kids like the other kid, RJ, like driving 2 hours each way to come to Oakland to play football because there's no housing.
Yeah. And then they had the other kid, Rajon Wright, whose family had moved to Stockton.
Yeah, Stockton.
And he was moving back and forth. He had lost his dad. He had an older brother playing ball.
Yeah, and dad got shot in a club and shit.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to like be a peacemaker. Trying to break up a fight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was there were some unfortunate things you saw, but I wish I was able to see a little bit of lightheartedness. I think
Samoan kid, yeah.
He was a bit of a shining light for me.
I think they wanted to try to make him the kind of light story, but even his story was a bit dark because
his
dad, and because basically his wife, he's married, like he's 20 years old, he's like married with two kids, like how his wife is like fucking holding everything down. She's like driving, you know, she's working, she's going to school, they got two kids. Nunu has to take the kids to school, sometimes to class, the teachers are like, can't bring the kids in the class. It's like,
that was
kind of like, sheesh, man.
It was definitely interesting to watch that. But again, I always harken back to having the structure and support of a family. Mm-hmm. Right, they're able to do that because there is some level of structure and support with his family.
He's got his mom, he's got aunts and stuff. And,
exactly. And so that was always sort of, even when you look at Rajon, you know, there's a structure in place.
Yeah.
There's a grandfather. Yeah. There's mom is definitely mom. Strong.
She's absolutely.
Aunts
absolutely.
Around.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, and that's what really was heartbreaking about Dior's situation was that the kid is looking to have someone help him. He wants help. He needs help. And because his father will not actually, not even apologize. I don't even know if the kid wants an apology as much as he just wants a fucking acknowledgement.
The acknowledgement
that you did. Bugging. That you was bugging. Like you was doing some terrible shit.
Yeah.
And because he doesn't want to do that, because he would much, I'm watching this guy, the moment this kid is in the house, you can feel the tension. It is palpable. You can cut it.
Dior couldn't even look at him, bro.
He would not budge. His father was an asshole within 40 seconds of him coming into that home.
Yeah. Where you going? Where you gonna himself. Go to school? What's your plan?
He never asked the kid how he was doing.
Yeah, how you doing?
He never asked that boy.
You hungry? Like, what's good?
Are you hungry? What are you doing?
Where are you sleeping?
Where are you sleeping? What is your well-being like? He never asked him any of that because he doesn't have any connection to him. And you're right. You know, this is about seeing my son play ball. This has got shit to do with him being a father and raising a young man to put out a responsible adult in the world. This was purely, he's the absolute worst kind of father because that's the kind of dude that will ride out. I was there. That's the
exactly. At least I was there. I went to the. I went to your games. Yeah.
That's the at least I was there kind of father.
Yeah.
And those niggas are the worst.
Yeah. Exactly. So, if you get a chance, catch up on all the seasons. That's very, very entertaining from season one through, and with a lot of twists and turns, a lot of wild shit that you do not see coming. I'm very interested to see how it goes when they go into the basketball JUCO thing, because that's obviously going to be even more intense of people trying to jump to D1 to get to the league. That's it for this week. Inka, we missed you. We'll see you next week. Anybody got anything else to say before we wrap it up?
No.
You good, Nye?
I think I'm good.
I want to say...
I do want to talk about P-Valley next week. I mean,
You know what? Let's talk about next week. Give me a week to catch up, because I've been... I read constantly how great it is.
For some reason, I thought you were watching it.
No, I wasn't. Inka was telling me to watch it, but I haven't gotten to it yet. But I hear it's awesome. So I wanna have a real discussion. So by next week, I'll have caught up. And I also want to say, peace and love to everybody in Beirut, because that is
Lebanon.
Yeah, and I don't know. I know they're saying there was some explosion from a chemical plant, but it's still kind of. I don't know why they don't have that much power, how much stuff they're in.
They said
275. So basically, there was 200 times the amount of what the Oklahoma City bomber used.
That's what I'm saying, and in the city, like right in the middle.
Apparently it was supposed to be housed there, and it had been left unattended for like 6 years or some shit. Almost like they basically walked out of a fucking chemical plant and never actually got rid of
or dispersed
the chemicals. So. Right. Scientifically, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if this is something that someone knew and used it as a terrorist attack.
Something like a plant that was near it set off. Something that happened in the conditions around it.
Set it off.
That explosion is
preliminary. Yeah, preliminary shit is that it was an accident. It was not intended. But this happened literally 24 hours ago, right? So they still have to figure it out. Significant investigation.
I just know that explosion is like it may be awestruck. Like how
it's
big,
a hole. It's a hole. It's literally a hole in the ground. They showed the before and afters. It is mind blowing.
Yeah, exactly. And then how far the shockwave reached and how fast it reached, and it's so many people have so different many angles of it. People were in their cars, were in their houses, all kind of angles you could really see, like, the power of that explosion.
There's a video I've seen just since we've been recording on Twitter. A bride was doing her wedding shots. So you don't see the explosion itself, but, like, somebody's, like, videotaping her with Steadicam. And then when the impact hits, you see, like, it blows her away, it blows the camera. It's like watching a movie. So you don't see the actual explosion, but you see the impact.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Yeah,
so Beirut's it's a big city. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's popping cities. Like it's a very old city. It's got a lot of great architecture and culture. It's not some little raggedy thing. Not that would make a difference, but like Beirut's a big ass city. So for them to have that happen at that city is it's terrible, man. So just peace and love to everybody who's there trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and it's also just hard. It's hard not to dwell on this, but it's hard in the midst of all the bullshit we've got going on here to also even process and absorb shit that's happening
other places
around the rest of the globe, right? Yeah. I heard about it yesterday, but it literally wasn't until the actual middle of the night that I was able to be like, let me watch this video, let me read up on it. I just didn't have the capacity.
Yeah, when you see the video, it makes you just like, it takes your breath away. It's like, Jesus. So that's it. I'm going to wrap it up on that note. We will see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.